Place program. Every Friday evening from 6 until 8 p.m. with me, your host, Tom Wilson. Right here on your favorite radio station, 89.3 WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
Thematic is moving. Yes, that's right. Thematic and Filmac are moving to Wednesday mornings at 10 a.m. Everything else stays the same. Only the day changes. So you can expect the usual interesting themes, the wide variety of songs that sometimes tells a story, the occasional silly songs, the instrumentals that end the sets, and the Thematic Hall of Fame selection. So follow me, Phil Mack, and the move of Thematic to Wednesday mornings from 10 a.m. to noon. Heard only on WHFR.FM, the only station making waves.
Hey, guess what? It's time again for another great WHFR record show. Join us once again for one of the fastest growing record shows in the state. The 6th annual WHFR Record Show will be held Saturday, October 26th from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. As always, the show will feature tons of records, CDs, DVDs, and some killer music memorabilia, all sold by independent, local, and out-of-state vendors. Last year's show topped all expectations, and this year's 6th annual will not disappoint. For more information, including vendor info, look us up on the web at WHFR.FM, or you can give us a call at 313-845-9676. So remember to mark that date on your calendar, October 26th, for the 6th annual WHFR Record Show. The record show you won't want to miss.
Oh! You are round MVP.
Yeah, man! Yo, Drew, I finally got round MVP. Round MVP.
No way. That was some ownage. It's a good thing you got me as your wingman.
Right. You mean when you threw that flash grenade at me?
Whatever, man. Huge round. Seriously, great stuff.
Finally earning round MVP takes determination. Soul getting into college. I've got what it takes.
All right, class. I'm going to pass back your tests. And a high score goes to... Brian.
Oh, yeah. High score, baby.
Visit knowhowtogo.org to learn what you should be doing right now to prepare for college. Start taking the steps at knowhowtogo.org.
I've got what it takes. So do you.
Brought to you by the American Council on Education, Lumina Foundation, and the Ad Council.
For more information in Michigan, visit knowhowtogomichigan.org. That's knowhowtogomichigan.org.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.FM is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And we have discussed many aspects of the UFO phenomenon in this show for the past 7 years, but one area we failed to explore fully are USOs, or unidentified submerged objects. So to help us with that subject, We have with us a return guest today, Mr. Preston Dennett. Preston began investigating UFOs and the paranormal in 1986 when he discovered that many of his friends and family members had had paranormal experiences for themselves. And since then, he has interviewed hundreds of witnesses and investigated a variety of UFO and related cases. Mr. Dennett has written several books to include UFO cases in individual states across the country. He's lectured and taught classes on UFOs and been interviewed on countless radio and TV shows and documentaries. And we're happy to have him back with us today. Hello, Preston.
Hi, David. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And yourself?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Now, like I told our listeners, we've had you on the show before, but just as a way of a reminder, tell us how you first got involved with the UFO phenomenon, the paranormal phenomenon in general.
Right. Well, actually, I was very repulsed by the whole subject initially. I was very skeptical. Mm-hmm. I don't believe anyone who said they saw a UFO and was really kind of rude about it, ready to tell them that they were crazy or on drugs or lying. But I heard a report on the news. This was in 1986 of a sighting over Alaska. Now, you may remember this. This was the Japanese commercial airliner, and the pilot was Captain Kenji Chiroshi.
Mm-hmm.
And he apparently tracked this UFO, followed this UFO, or it followed him, for some 50 miles or more, a long time, and it appeared on his onboard radar. The FAA confirmed it as well, though they later denied it and said that it was split images. Hmm. And, all of this, all these details, I did not hear any of this on the news. It was very tongue-in-cheek. The newscasters laughed nervously about it and made jokes about the pilot, and I thought, my God, this crazy pilot is reporting UFOs. I made the mistake of asking my family, my friends, and the people at my work. I worked at a book medical billing office. And I got a real shock. My brother and his two friends chased a UFO in their car for several miles, he said.
Mm.
And my sister-in-law said that she and her two friends observed a very large glowing object over Van Nuys Air Force Reserve Base. That's here in Southern California.
Right.
And these people, I knew they weren't lying. And furthermore, they weren't alone. And so I ended up, asking to talk to their friends who saw this stuff. I had a friend who had a missing time encounter. I had another friend who had a very close encounter over her home with a UFO that just hovered, an egg-shaped UFO, which kind of hovered over her home.
Mm-hmm.
And, and someone at work heard, I mentioned this pilot again, and she's like, oh, yeah, me and my whole family. And this was a rule. Generally, witnesses were not alone in most cases, and that's proved to be pretty much the case in a lot of the cases I'm investigating. Most cases when people see UFOs, they usually have another witness.
Okay.
So I think that's important to point out. And that's what really impressed me. I'm like, well, these guys aren't lying. More than one person saw it. They're reporting the same thing. Still couldn't believe it, so I started reading all the books I could find. I'm expecting to find an answer, and there really was no answer in these books, just more stories. And so I started researching myself. And, one thing led to another. I wrote an article for the local newspaper, and they published it. It got the front page, to my shock, and I got more stories than that. And wrote an article for a magazine, went on the radio, and wrote a book, and one thing after another.
And here you are.
It really fast that it took over my life in like about a year, I would say.
Right.
UFOs had pretty much, I became obsessed with them.
So it's over 20 years you've been investigating, right?
Oh, yeah. Let me see. 1986.
86?
2000, this is 25 years now.
25 years. My goodness. So you gathered quite a bit of evidence yourself, right?
Talked to hundreds of abductees and even more UFO witnesses. been to hot spots. I started chasing these UFOs myself. I went to the hot spots. I went to where they were being seen, and I've ended up, to date, I've seen probably 10 or 20 really good sightings that I would classify as definitely unknown.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're out in California, right?
Right.
And how close to the ocean are you there?
I'm very close, actually. Right now I live in Reseda, which is in the San Fernando Valley, but at the time I was started investigating, I was just maybe 5 or 10 miles from the ocean in Topanga Canyon, which turned out to be a huge UFO hotspot.
Okay, tell us.
Yeah, but, initially, most of the sightings I was getting were just, your regular run-of-the-mill UFOs, hovering over someone's house or chasing a car down the street or landing in the field.
Mm.
I started getting a bunch of reports of these underwater UFOs as well, which was really intriguing. Objects coming in and out of the coast there off the, off the Southern California coast.
Okay. Can you cite a couple cases of that?
Yeah. Probably the most famous case and one of my favorite occurred on January 15th, 1956. And this is kind of typical of what's going on here. A bunch of people were on the beach. This was in the early evening.
Mm-hmm.
They watched this very large, about 20, 30 feet in diameter, disc-shaped object, glowing orange and bright, comes gliding down out of the sky in kind of a controlled orbit, a controlled trajectory, and it kind of just plops there on the water and slowly sinks down. The water starts bubbling up like crazy, making this weird foam, and it lit up the whole water there for a long, long time. It gathered a lot of attention. Lifeguards came and they watched it. There was a night watchman who he saw it as well. And then police officers from two neighboring counties also converged on the scene. So we had a whole group of, dozens of witnesses watching this thing sink down beneath the surface and disappear, and they brought out divers as soon as they could get them there. By the time the divers got there, the object was gone, and divers were not able to find any evidence. They brought Geiger counters. There was nothing, but it created a huge press uproar, and the next day, UFOs seen off the coast, and the Coast Guard released a statement, which is laughable, saying that this UFO was not a UFO at all. In fact, it was a light buoy. A buoy with, a light on it.
Hmm.
I actually showed a picture of this, foot-wide little thing with a light on it. And now, this is a absurd explanation. Anyone who knows anything about this case knows that it doesn't account for the evidence at all. And
no.
The object was 30 feet wide and came flying down out of the sky. This is, and light buoys, of course, they stay in the water.
Well, yeah. The light buoy should have still been there.
Right, that's another thing. And when this happened again, like a month later, it caused even further, controversy. So this is one of my favorite cases and one of the ones that really, I think, brought attention to this area. Though I have to tell you, before I even started investigating this, I found out that all the other major researchers in this area, like, Ann Druffel and Yvonne Smith and Barbara Lamb and Robert Stanley and Michael Lindemann and all the other people who've been researching this area all have underwater UFO cases as well.
Really? So
there's something going on there. And, what happened was I wrote this book, UFOs Over California.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I'll devote a chapter to some of these underwater cases. And that's what I did. And I also wrote an article for the local, for Fate magazine, outlining all these cases and putting forth the theory that there's an underwater UFO base, which I think there is, and I can tell you why. But at any rate, the article and the generated a lot of attention. It got quoted in the LA Times, a bunch of other places picked it up. I got a call from the History Channel. They wanted me to do a show on deep sea UFOs, which I did, and they told me it was their most popular show ever, so they called me back to do Deep Sea UFOs 2 and UFO Hunters. And so that's what really kind of catapulted me into this underwater UFO investigation.
Right.
That brought in so many more cases. So I am just flooded with no pun intended, flooded with cases of these USOs.
Yeah.
Literally.
Well, that's good. Now, you say, back to this case that you were talking about where police came in on the scene from different areas, right?
Right, from Redondo Beach and Hermosa Beach. There's a lot of cases involving authorities. People, skeptics especially, think that, there are not, credible people who are seeing this stuff. But that's absolutely false.
Was there a police report?
You know, that's a good question. I have not pursued that, so I don't know. This is kind of an old case. I've got a lot of new cases. I mean, literally, ones that happened just, weeks ago.
But you have the date of this particular incident, right?
Yeah, the exact date, January 15th. So it should be possible.
It should be easy to find, yeah. Yeah, you should check that out. Let us know, okay?
Now, there's so much information on this. This is going to take me a while to research this whole area.
But, I'm willing to bet, were I a gambling man, that, as they say, let me go to the casino here, that there is not a police report, or they came up with the same light buoy idea. Because, if the Coast Guard's going to lie about it, the cops are going to lie about it.
Yeah, it's interesting because when I conducted this investigation to the Topanga Canyon UFO wave, this is kind of my first investigation. There was this huge wave of sightings over Topanga Canyon, which is located right off the coast there between Santa Monica and Malibu. It's west of L.A. And this UFO wave involved hundreds of sightings over a two-year period, and it began on June 14th, 1992, when there was literally hundreds of UFOs seen in the sky on that one night alone. And I've interviewed over 20 independent adult witnesses, who are in separate areas in the canyon who saw stuff on that night.
Mm-hmm.
Still getting reports. So it was a crazy night.
Okay, there was supposed to be a UFO flap in that area in 1992. Now, was that just on that one night, or was there what we regard as a flap going on for weeks or months?
Initially it was just this kind of wave, a UFO wave that was, defined to a certain time period, 1992 to 1994.
Okay.
But as I started investigating this, I found cases stretching back to 1947 in this area, underwater UFOs, actually.
Okay.
And stretching, reaching up to the present day. So it's not only it's a flat area. It's a hot spot. And so I guess is the way to put it.
Okay, so in other words, it's still going on.
Yes, it's still going on, not at the intensity that it was before. Mm. Maybe it is, and it's just not being reported. Because I was really out there pounding the streets and knocking on doors and putting up flyers during this wave. So, and a lot of, as you know, 1 in 100 people report their sightings. So most UFO reports go unreported.
Right. Right, because
any estimations of how much activity there is vastly underestimated.
Certainly. They're all afraid of ridicule.
Right. And speaking of which, the point I wanted to make about the police is I know that they're receiving hundreds of cases because I had an in, a source within the police department.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to verify this actually from multiple independent sources as well, that they receive hundreds of calls per year. I actually called them up and asked them about this, and they lied to me. They've lied to other UFO witnesses as well. Like during this wave, witnesses would call frantic, saying, "Oh my God, I saw this. Has anybody else reported anything?" And the police would say, "No, we didn't hear anything." Which is a flat out lie. So, in their defense, though, they're dealing with a major UFO wave at that time and a hot spot, so it's difficult, I think, for them to handle this. And they did cooperate with me in a lot of ways. I gave them my number, and they did refer callers to me, so I would get calls as they occurred live, and I'd go rushing out there looking for these UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
So
in other words, if the police got a call, they'd say, "Call Preston Dennett, right? Don't bother me. Call Preston."
Right, right. Or they'll refer you to, places like MUFON or the UFO National UFO Reporting Center.
Right, right, right.
And some people have had luck calling the Air Force. Most have not.
I'll tell you, I was investigating a case here in Michigan, and I tried calling Selfridge Air Base and got a recording a couple times, left a message. No one ever called me back. They don't want to talk to you. In my experience, I mean, hopefully you've had better experience.
I personally haven't, but I've talked to some witnesses who called the Air Force, and they were very interested in what they saw.
No.
So it does happen, but generally, yeah, they'll ignore you and they'll give you the old party line, you know. We don't study UFOs, we got out of that a long time ago. They represent no threat to national security. Goodbye, we're not interested.
You know, from what you're saying, it would seem like if they are aware of a given case, they will tell a witness that calls in, no, we don't know anything about it, we don't handle those UFO cases anymore. But if they're not aware of a case, they're very interested in hearing what you have to say. Do I have this right?
It's hard to say. We're kind of in the position of speculating here, and that's a slippery slope in this field. But yeah, that's what it looks like.
Well, if that's,
I know for a fact the government is aware of this stuff. There's a case in Topanga Canyon. This guy woke up, he's a teacher at a college, at the head of his department, and so a legitimate witness. He woke up, and because there was helicopter activity, and I've had a lot of complaints from other people in the canyon, and he saw this, all these helicopters searching for something, and out slips this UFO, shiny silver, says it was 50 feet long, and zipping down the canyon towards the ocean.
And
so clearly the military is aware of this. They were hovering over the area during the times of these sightings. Not only that, I know of another case involving a lady who was having dramatic visitations by all kinds of, apparently, different ETs. I got this from a secondhand source, and she refused to be interviewed by me. She's very upset by what's happening to her because she's apparently under government surveillance, constant, because she's attracting so many UFOs. And they asked her to testify in some court, she said. To testify before officials about what's happening for her. They made her do it and swore her to secrecy, so she will not talk about it. She's really upset that, the story leaked out to her friend.
Not to testify in an open court, but in some secret tribunal?
Yeah, that's what I'm assuming. I really don't know. I haven't heard anything quite like this before. But, I don't doubt it because this witness who told me this, he was one of the ins to the police department. He was giving me information on this police tape that I actually had possession of and was snuck out of the police department. And he didn't know about it. So he knew stuff that was on this tape that, he shouldn't have known unless he was telling the truth. So it's crazy, And it kept leading me back down towards these underwater UFO activity.
Right, right.
Because I found out that started way back in 1947, apparently with this mysterious mass, like this underwater reef or mountain that kept appearing and disappearing in the San Francisco Bay area. And this was causing a lot of alarm among the steamships there. And the Navy was actually called up to investigate this. And they sent out this ship to investigate. And they could not find any reef or anything like that, but they eventually did track it down to down the coast, to off the coast of Southern California, where they did measure it, and it was a very large mass, and they were trying to determine exactly how large it was when they lost it again, and they never found it. So this is way back in 1947, during the UFO superwave that swept across the world, this unprecedented wave of activity.
Right. And it couldn't have been a submarine. They would have known.
No, this is very, very large.
Yeah.
Speaking of submarines, there's some weird cases involving that as well in this area.
Okay, let me take just a moment here, and we'll get back to the submarines. Hold that thought, Preston. I need to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM. the only station making waves here in Dearborn out of Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with UFO investigator Mr. Preston Dennett on underwater UFOs or USOs. So we were talking about submarines, Preston. What were you going to say now?
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of cases where people see these objects coming in and out of the water, floating on the water, you know, hovering above the water, just flying out or just flying in. But there's only one case that I could find of people who've seen actual humanoids.
Hmm.
And it's this very bizarre case that occurred on July 28th, 1962. And this is in the same area. It's just the Santa Catalina Channel, you know, from Santa Barbara south down to, you know, Pacific Palisades, this area where there's a very deep trench, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
And so at any rate, this is, you know, about 6 miles south of Catalina Island. And the captain of this chartered fishing boat sees what he first assumes is a Russian submarine. And he saw what appeared to be the stern of the submarine, and there were five men, two in white suits, white clothes, and two wearing dark pants and white shirts, and one in this sky blue kind of jumpsuit. And he was not really close enough to see much other detail of who these people were, but apparently they were normal-looking people. And he passed, you know, the submarine at about a quarter mile. It was obviously a submarine, but there was no markings. Its stern was very strange shape, and suddenly as they're passing it, this submarine turns, heads straight for the fishing boat as if to ram it, right? So the captain of the fishing boat has to make an emergency turn to avoid this sub, which moves past them at really high speeds. He said it was bizarre because it emitted no noise and left no wake, really, at all, except for a little swell.
Hmm.
So he was shook up by it and contacted the Navy, and they showed him all these silhouettes of various subs, you know, German subs, Russian subs, Japanese subs, and he's like, no, that wasn't it. If there was no recognizable sub, it just was. And, you know, when you put together all the bizarre details, the lack of sound, the way this lack of swell, the high speed, the strange behavior, and strange appearance. Well, it looks like it might be a UFO, USO case.
Yeah.
Certainly that's what Jim and Coral Lorenzen, who were the investigators who, you know, initially researched this, believed.
Now, you may have said, and I missed it, how did he recognize, why did he call it a sub? Did it come from underneath the water?
No, he initially noticed what lights, actually. Is what he saw, and he looked at it and was like, oh, look at, there's lights, no, there's people, and it looks like a submarine.
Oh, I see, it just looked like a submarine.
It was just barely sticking up out of the ocean, and there were men on the deck of it.
Oh, okay. Huh.
But it's the only case I have like that involving humanoids, though I do have some abduction cases where people were taken.
It's odd that this boat, sub, whatever it was, could whiz past them like that and not make a noticeable wake.
Yeah, that's one of the, you know, red flags, one of the markers of these kinds of things.
Mm.
These objects are coming, you know, we don't have anything that can fly out of the water at a couple hundred miles an hour. We don't have anything that can move through the water beyond, you know, officially, I'm going to say. You know,
right.
You know, at hundreds of miles per hour.
Right.
Or anything, for that matter, that can come flying out of the sky and go splashing into the water at high speed without breaking up into a million little pieces.
Mm.
But clearly these things, these USOs, are the same thing as UFOs, but they have an ability to go in and out of water. And I have to tell you, I think our oceans are a lot thicker with these objects than people realize.
Yeah.
It's the perfect place for them to hide and not be, you know, chased after or recognized or seen.
Yeah.
And certainly we have no methods of getting down at the speeds, you know, that these objects can move. And another point I have to make is that it's not only water that these objects are coming in and out of. There are cases where people have seen these objects going into land, just crashing down into the ground, and the ground opens up, and they apparently, you know, are, have some force field or something that allows them to move through the earth or through trees. I've heard of a couple of cases like that.
Hmm.
So these are really advanced craft.
Yeah, it's the density of the material. I mean, you know,
right.
There's air between, there's space between our atoms in everything.
Right. So who knows how fast they can move underwater, but it could be, you know, really fast.
Which,
like they move as fast as they move through the air, which has, you know, been clocked at, you know, upwards of 2,000-3,000 miles per hour in some cases.
Yeah, which would go to the same type of technologies that abductees report, where the beings come through the walls and then levitate the subject and levitate them through the walls. So the ET and the human being is actually levitated through a closed window or a solid wall.
Right,
or door.
Right. Which doesn't, I mean, it sounds like magic, but it's really not. Our own technology is catching up with this. We're levitating objects now with sound and lasers,
mm-hmm.
and we know that matter itself is mostly energy, and there's really very, very little matter in the human body at all. It's
right.
mostly space.
Right.
So it's just a matter of kind of aligning the molecules right. and the atoms.
So heretofore, this is how the skeptics get away with saying, that can't be, these can't exist, because what you're describing defies the known laws of physics. But maybe it's the case that the physics that we know of is all we know of and nothing more.
Right, right. Well, that's exactly what kept me out of the UFO field. I'm like, oh, you're kidding? UFOs, and they levitate, and there's, what, telepathy, you're telling me?
Yeah. And now they're invisible? You know, when Bud Hopkins came out with his book, Sight Unseen, he talked about invisible UFOs. How can these, you know, be in big cities in New York and one person see them and another person doesn't? Well, I have seen pictures where two different cameras, one infrared and one regular, and they're taking a picture of the same area of the sky, and in the regular camera, nothing shows, but in the infrared, there is this light or UFO moving through that area.
Right. Oh, no doubt they can turn invisible. I remember the Mexican Air Force released a bunch of really dramatic moving photos from a plane,
mm-hmm.
that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know of other cases where people, you know, are seeing a UFO, and right next to them, other people aren't seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly,
yeah.
These objects have the ability to control who is seeing them.
Yeah,
when they show themselves, you can bet they're aware that you are seeing them.
Or the energy that their craft or the technology on their craft is generating is into the infrared or even ultraviolet spectrum. Now, I believe the case you're talking about in Mexico was the FLIR camera with ultraviolet technology capabilities that saw these UFOs, and one actually chased the plane. Is that the one you're talking about? Where they said that was just the oil wells. Flame.
Right.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Not oil wells, but what am I trying to say? Oil something or other.
Oil fires.
Oil fires, yeah. Oil fires. Well, number one, they're taking the pictures in the sky. These objects are in the sky. So you're saying there are oil fires in the sky that actually chase planes, you know, but we're supposed to believe that because that's the official word on it, you know.
Yeah, the our military, the Air Force, the Army, they've totally bungled the UFO situation and are continuing to do so. And this cover-up, it's demonstrable, it's obvious,
mm-hmm.
With documents through the Freedom of Information Act,
mm-hmm.
but it's a complete disaster. There are so many people coming out of the woodwork now. This, you know, disclosure movement, mm-hmm. is really taking hold.
Right, right.
We're gonna see a lot of changes, I think, in how people view this phenomenon.
Do you think with all of these quote-unquote whistleblowers that are coming forward now and insiders that have have actually worked with UFOs and worked with ET beings. Do you think that the government or the powers that be, whoever the government actually is, I don't know anymore, will continue to deny?
No, I don't. I think we're seeing a trend towards this being more accepted. Certainly, that's true in other countries. They've released a lot of files. We're very behind in that.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're in a situation where if the government denies these cases, they're just drawing attention to it. And if they attack a witness, well, it's the same thing. They're drawing attention to this phenomena. And if they want to remain in control of the situation, which is rapidly spinning out of control, I mean, mind you, the UFOs could easily end the cover-up in a minute by just hovering over a major city.
I wish they would.
Right. Well, yeah, they've done an awful close. I mean, look at Phoenix.
Yeah.
The Hudson Valley. There's been a lot of undeniable activity.
Right.
Gulf Breeze.
Right.
And it's not stopping. They're not going to go away. I think the UFOs do have an agenda to move us towards open official contact. And I just can't see this cover-up going on that much longer.
Mm. Yeah, but you know what's going to happen, thanks to Hollywood. If one of these huge craft park themselves over a big city, they're going to think Independence Day, you know? War of the Worlds.
It's hard to say how this is going to go down.
Yeah.
And it looks like, you know, there's been a recent upsurge of UFO activity just recently.
Mm.
It's kind of quiet there for a while, but suddenly there's major things going on all over the place. Just, let me see, on June 26th, I got a major underwater case in this same area, Santa Catalina Channel, with a group of Boy Scouts. And this is like, you know, dozens of witnesses who watched what started with three large globe-shaped objects kind of hovering there. And they're like, are those stars? And suddenly these objects flared up and started emitting smaller ships, which start darting around everywhere. And this is a pattern that's turned up in other cases I have in this area.
Mm.
And, you know, they started counting these objects because 10, 20, 30 of them were coming out at once. And they counted, you know, 200 objects.
Wow.
And these were going in and out of the water. They were flying mostly to the east, they said.
Mm.
But flying in all different directions. And there was U-shaped craft. There was one really giant kind of like cargo ship. There were these little fighter-type craft, little saucer-shaped ones, so a bunch of different shapes and sizes. It's really interesting.
Hmm. And was this reported to any military base or police?
Not yet. This has just happened. I'm right now in the process of gathering just some first-hand witnesses before I move further with this. I got a hold of the guy on who runs a newspaper on Catalina Island, and he's aware of a lot of UFO activity going on as well.
Mm.
So I hope I can connect with him and get some, and with these Boy Scout officials. But so far, you know, already people are dragging their feet and not willing to talk.
Mm.
Just because of the nature of the case involving so many objects, I think, is freaking people out. There was another case, you know, during this Topanga Canyon wave of June 14th, 1992, you know, some people saw one UFO, some saw two, some saw three, some saw 10 or 20. But one couple I interviewed, they saw the whole thing occur, starting early in the evening and going on to about 11 p.m. at night.
Hmm.
They saw objects coming up from below, from behind a ridge, down towards the ocean. And what's interesting to me is normally when someone sees a UFO, you know, they see this star-like object and it comes swooping down, right, from above.
Hmm.
But not in this case. These came from below, and they started counting these craft because first 10 would come up from behind the ridge, and then another 10, and then another 20. So the wife started counting them, and she counted over 200 of these craft. And the husband's like, oh, no, it was maybe 100, 150. I don't think it was 200. But that always makes me laugh because 100 is still way too many objects.
Yeah, when it gets up into to that range, you know, you lose count.
Right, and my question is, where are all these things coming from? They're coming from this underwater area.
Mm.
I was contacted by a submarine navigator who actually takes submarines up and down the coast there. And he says, oh, yeah, there's a very deep trench there. And easily many areas for these objects to hide. I think there's got to be a base down there, or at least a parking lot of UFOs. I think there's a base, because I've got like 3 or 4 cases where people were abducted in this area.
Oh.
Normally when someone's abducted, you know, I as an investigator can almost predict a large amount of what they're going to tell me, because I've heard it so many times.
Mm.
Where they're taken inside a craft and with rounded walls and a table and this kind of thing.
Mm.
But that's not what the people in this area have told me. They said that they were taken to an underground base area. One described rock walls. And what's interesting is none of them described the typical grays either. They all described instead the praying mantis type.
Oh, really?
I thought was kind of interesting. And apparently the praying mantis are higher up in the hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
Though that's not entirely clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know David Kaywood, a friend of mine, passed away, unfortunately, co-author with Landy Malice of The Other Sky. They were both abductees or experiencers. They prefer to be called experiencers. At any rate, he had his father-in-law over to see the new home out here in Dearborn, Michigan. And I don't know if the poor old guy knew that they were involved in this or not, or didn't believe them, or whatever, that they were experiences. But he was checking out their new home, and all of a sudden, one of these praying mantis type just appeared in the living room, checking out the home with them. Well, needless to say, the poor old guy darted out of the house and refused to come back in. So,
well, I can't blame him. That must be quite a shock, especially if you've never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, really?
I mean, to me, finding out UFOs were real hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm.
Not good news for me. It sent me on this quest to figure out what is going on. This was not taken seriously on the news. This was not taught in schools. So it really hit me hard.
I think all you have to do is think about how tiny a planet we are compared to, you look at all these stars, what we call stars. Most of them are actually galaxies.
Right.
Filled with billions of stars each, and we are so minuscule. How can we think that we're and all be all,
Oh, it's daunting. But, another thing that really bothered me for a long time is the fact that aliens have eyes and a nose and a mouth and arms and legs. I thought, this is too Star Trek. This cannot be real. But the truth is, you're kind of stuck with the stories. What's real is real.
That's right.
You can't deny evidence and solve any mysteries, but,
I can just imagine E.T. coming down for the first time looking at us saying, look, they got eyes and legs and arms. I can't believe this. I got to take another break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with UFO investigator and USO investigator and author, Mr. Preston Dennett. And Preston, one of the more famous USO cases, that's USO cases, is the 1967 Shag Harbor incident in Nova Scotia in Canada. You know about that? Can you tell us about that one?
Yeah, I do know of that. I haven't talked to any first-hand witnesses. I know, what I've learned from the book by Chris Stiles, I believe. But, it's an amazing case, one of few UFO crash cases that's really got that many witnesses. Roswell's up there, but Shag Harbor is an amazing case because there were, dozens of witnesses who watched this object, a very large object, come swooping down out of the sky in kind of a semi-controlled orbit and crash into the harbor. And not certain whether it crashed or crash-landed or exactly what's going on, but it sunk pretty quick. And a lot of people saw it, and they gathered, and there was crowds, and divers were sent down who apparently were able to get right up next to this thing, and not inside of it, but clearly were able to get close enough to identify that this was very unusual and nothing of ours. And this is where it got really murky, and we're not sure exactly what happened because there was a cover-up enacted on this. And very little information leaked out. It took years for some of this information to be uncovered by investigators. But apparently the object moved and to a different area, and the Navy followed it, and they observed it for, like, I think it was like 3 days. It stayed there until suddenly it took off. So apparently it was just needing repairs or something like this. But it's an amazing case and involving a lot of witnesses. There's government documents that confirm this case. So it's one of those undeniable cases that is not getting the attention it deserves.
So did they have eyes on this craft for 3 days?
Yes. They were right there, trying to, they couldn't get inside. They didn't know what to do. They knew someone was in there. And so they just watched it.
Good Lord. How did they describe it, or did they?
An important point to make is it's not just oceans. And, there are cases of really small bodies of water containing these objects, little tiny reservoirs, a bunch of cases in upstate New York involving really small bodies of water with UFOs coming out of them. Mm-hmm. One case I investigated involved four teenagers in a lake in Texas. This is just a small lake, and they were going pleasure boating one evening. They were going to cruise out there and mess around a little bit as boyfriend and girlfriends. And they had just parked their boat early in the evening, and when suddenly they came upon this thing that rose up out of the water. And he at first thought it was one of these sunken docks or something, but it was this very large, round, black thing. And it came right up against their boat, and the girls freaked out. They're like, oh, get away, what is this? And they throttled the motor, and they could not move. This boat would not move. Whatever this object was, it hooked up on their boat. And so they all really panicked at this point, and something happened. They had missing time, because the next thing they know, they're in a different area. They're cruising along at a very unsafe speed and heading towards, the home dock. And they reach there moments later, and it is hours later, and their families are really upset. So they had missing time, and he wants to go under hypnosis, but he's really afraid. And one of the, he's not able to contact the other witnesses at this point, so it's just this one guy I've talked to.
How long ago had that happened?
This was many years ago. This was, in the early 60s, I believe, or I have the exact date. But,
So it's not like he just made this story up to, account to his parents. And
it's crazy. There's not a whole lot of these USO underwater abduction cases. There's another one on Catalina Island with this lady who was scuba diving. And she started feeling like, she couldn't breathe. And she came up for air when there was this giant UFO above her, and next thing she knows, she's being sucked up inside of it. So that's one. I think that's the only case I know of where someone was abducted while scuba diving.
Bud Hopkins witnessed the woman was taken from, I think it was a 10th or 12th story apartment building, and this abduction was witnessed by at least 20 people, and they saw the beings and the human going into a craft, and then that craft zipped off and dove into the Hudson River.
Right. Isn't that amazing? And there's a lot of other kids. Betty Andreessen reported the same type of thing. She was abducted, taken to this UFO, and she was in front of this view screen. Bam, it goes into the water. And so there's no doubt that they have bases on our planet under water.
Wow.
I think there's one off the Southern California coast. I wouldn't be surprised if there's one off the Florida coast somewhere. There's a lot of activity there. Puerto Rico has been, named as possibly having a base.
Well, out of all the Jacques Cousteau's in the world and all the all we know about our oceans, we really only know about 1% of our ocean. In fact, I've heard we know more about the surface of the moon than we do about our oceans.
So right, yeah, we've mapped every inch of the moon, and we can't quite get to the ocean yet. Certainly,
no.
The Mariana Trench, we know how deep it is, but we haven't been to the bottom of it yet, so we don't know exactly what's down there. There's all these areas that are completely unexplored, and this is why we're still uncovering major new species. Just recently, a bunch of interesting sharks were discovered.
Mm.
We're still finding all kinds of new species in the ocean, and we'll probably continue to do so for years.
Our
technology improves.
It's only recently that we got the technology to get down 2 miles deep where the Titanic lay. And the Mariana Trench is 7 miles deep.
Imagine there's probably a bunch of crashed UFOs. There's probably all kinds of stuff going on down there that would just shock people.
Hey, I probably have a city down there, you know? Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Like that James Cameron movie, I forget, The Abyss.
The Abyss, yeah. Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me because, there's activity on the moon. There's activity in outer space. Between our planets, there's been a lot of bizarre stuff reported and continuing. There was just recently a sighting near the International Space Station.
Oh?
June 26th, same night as this Catalina sighting, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Tell us about the... let's get off UFOs for USOs for a second and tell us about this sighting at the International Space Station. Any details on that?
No, I don't have a lot of details on it, only what was reported publicly, but apparently it was this very bright object that was hovering near the space station, which has been a persistent problem. And if you look at the history of the space program, starting with Gemini and Apollo and Skylab and moving on, you'll see that every single one of these things are plagued by UFOs.
Yeah.
And the International Space Station is no different.
Hmm.
And they've photographed it, and there's some really interesting photographs, actually, that have been released showing what are clearly disc-shaped objects. And for that matter, NASA's space shuttle footage, well, I'm sure you've seen some of that, that's showing objects shooting at each other out there. So,
yeah, and I wonder that one I know about it looks like a light. We'll just say it's a light moving slowly from right to left, and then this shot or bright flash of light and an object going toward it, and the light that was going from right to left zips off back from whence it came. And they're saying that those are ice crystals. Crystals.
Frozen balls of urine is what they're saying.
Yeah, boy. Shooting out like that. And
and it's silly because, even if you discount that one particular segment, there are many, many others which are way more impressive.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff coming out now that is just, oh, my God. There's just no denying it anymore. It's an open conspiracy. Most of the public knows it's real. I think in upper levels of science and certainly the military and our government, they know it's real, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
There's just this kind of a little segment of our population, 25, 30, 40%, that doesn't want to believe it. It really threatens their worldview.
Yeah. I wonder how much the president or other presidents have known about this, because Carter and Clinton tried to get to the bottom of this and try to get information, and they were told, you do not have a need to know, sir.
Right. Well, certainly they know something about it. Bush, one of the Bushes was head of the FBI, I think, wasn't he?
Yeah, the old man. Yeah.
So he's got to know. Certainly we know Eisenhower knew and Truman knew.
Truman knew, yeah.
And Carter... I'm not sure, Ford, Nixon, these guys. Nixon apparently did see the alien bodies and showed them to Jackie Gleason.
I've heard that story, and there's so many elements of that story that is so hard to believe, in my estimation. You've got a sitting president who can just walk away from security and jump in his private car and drive off to some entertainer's house?
Yeah, well, this is a different time, don't forget. It's not like it is now where we tracked every second and the internet and all of that. I don't know. I think it's believable, and certainly there's a lot of other cases where people who are in the know are showing this stuff to their friends, driving them out to the bases and saying, look, you know, you want to see bodies? You want to see crash authors?
Yeah, that's how...
A lot of cases like that.
Yeah, that's how... Oh, no, I'm not going to think of his name. Area 51...
Bob Lazar?
Bob Lazar, thank you. That's how Bob Lazar got into trouble. You know, he felt like, hey, I'm Superman. You better... keep your identity as Clark Kent, I'll tell you, or you're in trouble.
Yeah, well, there's, like I say, the government cover-up is crumbling, and people are, you know, telling their stories now with impunity. The government is not cracking down on them.
Yeah, well, what are they going to do? As soon as they say you're releasing a secret information, they're admitting that this information is true.
Yeah, but... I feel bad a little bit for the government because they painted themselves into a corner. I don't know how they can come clean, you know, with this, but they're going to have to.
They're going to have to, and just say, look, forgive me, but we had to lie to you all this time.
I don't see any other way around it.
And most people, like myself, would say, yeah, I know. Now move on, okay?
Right. I think if we can release people from their security oaths, have the president make an official announcement. You know, even if he doesn't release everything, just say, yeah, I think UFOs are real. That would be a start.
Well, he can't, you know, he can give his opinion, but that's just an opinion. You know, what he needs to say is, yes, I have the solid proof UFOs are real. Now, what they are...
I'm not stopping until I see the Roswell craft in a museum, because I think that's my right. You know, these people who have taken this UFO technology have done so illegally, unconstitutionally. And it's not fair. It's not right. And it's got to change.
Well, they feel, number one, well, back in 47, they thought, you know, there'd be panic in the street. And maybe they were right. I could see, you know, because it was right after the war and the tensions with Korea and all this good stuff.
No, Roswell almost was released. I mean, they were that close. They released the article. We were there on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, they released it. And then it was such a secret that that released it? I'm terrible.
Walter Hout.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just call you up when I can't think of names. Walter Hout released it. He didn't even know that it was not supposed to be released. It was so secret. You know, and then they came down on him. No, keep your mouth shut about that. Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, can you imagine if they had just gone forth with it? It would be a different world. But no, that's where the cover-up really kind of started.
Yeah.
Well, not started, but certainly it was a huge mess.
And look at all the...
It continues to be.
Yeah, look at all the billions of dollars. I'm talking billions, if not more, spent on keeping this a secret. And the lives that not only have been shattered, but have lost, you know, over keeping this secret.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely, I mean, if you run into hard evidence of UFOs, you can bet you're going to get a visit. There's still a cover-up. Even recently in Stevensville, Texas, there was that wave of sightings. The military was involved in that. Showing up saying, oh, we know nothing about it. Oh, yeah, we were there. That was our afterburners. They were threatened witnesses.
Yeah.
So, we're still bungling this situation. It's really unfortunate.
Yeah, they were threatening witnesses, yeah. I know about that.
It's absurd. I mean, in this day and age, they're still trying to cover this up.
If nothing happened, why are they threatening witnesses?
You know, if the United States doesn't move forward with this, England or Brazil... or Mexico, or Canada, or France.
Or E.T.
People are going to show the UFOs and, you know, basically take control of the situation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think they're, you know, I had Stephen Bassett on the show a couple months ago, and he said that you know, it's America that kind of runs the show. They're waiting for America to make the announcement. They don't want to step on America's toes. Well, I'll tell you what, they pretty much have admitted, you know, France in their Cometa report has admitted
right.
These things are unknown objects, unknown origin, and probably extraterrestrial in origin, and that America is being very poor sport about it. So.
Right, they're still not releasing the evidence. I mean, all these countries, it's not just the U.S. who has crashed UFOs and alien bodies and absolute conclusive proof, you know, of radar, visual, photographic proof. And it's not being released. You know, yes, they can release files that they've been investigating UFOs for years to the present day, but I want to see the crashed UFO.
Yeah.
I want to see the alien bodies. You know, let's get this done with and let's move forward.
I hear you. President Dennett, where can people go to find out more about your work?
I have a website. It's actually my name, Preston Dennett. If you just Google my name, it'll take you right to it. The actual website address is PrestonDennett.Weebly.com.
Okay.
I have all my books there and excerpts, and you can contact me if you'd like to, you know, report a case or have any questions. You can contact me through my website.
Very good. And Dennett is D-E-N-N-E-T-T.
Correct.
Very good. Preston, I appreciate you coming on the show and talking to us about USOs. I know you have a lot more you can share with us, so maybe we can do this again sometime. What do you say?
Oh, my pleasure, yeah.
Okay.
I was blast talking about this stuff. I could talk for hours.
Really? Yep. But unfortunately, we're out of time now, so thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And, if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, then Tuesday Forum, and then the date of the show. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, ufoimplications.com. So please stay tuned to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR, Dearborn.